Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On WNYC, and Bruce Springsteen published a memoir last month, as many of you know. It's called Born to Run, and it's incisive, thoughtful, funny, and brimming with stories that give a satisfying peek into how the boss has crafted his narratives of broken heroes chasing that runaway American dream. And while we've been knee-deep in election politics, the book got us thinking about how the themes in Springsteen's songs keep on cropping up in American politics and society. Many of you had fun with our Bruce the Debate hashtag this week, so we thought we'd take a little time now to talk about the actual book and the artist and dig into a few songs that still resonate so much, whether they were written 4 or 40 years ago. So here with me now to follow a couple of those threads is David Camp, a Vanity Fair contributing editor who recently profiled Springsteen for the magazine. Hi, David. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be with you.
And let's listen to some music and talk about some of these ideas after hearing more specific examples. Here's about 45 seconds of the song The Promised Land, which came out on the record Darkness on the Edge of Town back in 1978.
I've done my best to live the right way.
In a promised land. What's going on with this man in the promised land? The promised land referenced in the song gives it a hopeful sheen. What do you think Springsteen is referring to there? And should this guy be hopeful?
I think it's despair mixed with hope, because he's talking about, you know, in the earlier part of the song, he's working at his daddy's garage. But then he says he wants to, in the part we just heard, he wants to explode and tear this town apart, take a knife and cut this pain from my heart. It's a really prevalent theme, especially of kind of the 70s and early 80s Springsteen, is restlessness. There's got to be something somewhere better for me. But it's not despairing. There's always a tincture of hope, though Springsteen would never use a word like tincture. But I mean, there's always a sense of a better life somewhere. I just got to get out of here.
Mm-hmm. So here's another one from that era, and tell me if you think this is thematically similar or different. This is the title track from The River.
I got a job working construction for the Johnstown Company. But lately there ain't been much work on account of the economy. Now all them things that seem so important, well, mister, they vanish right into the air. Now I just act like I don't remember. Mary acts like she don't care.
So that was 1980 Springsteen. The Johnstown Company that he mentions refers, I think, to a real-life company in a town in western Pennsylvania, steel country, or one that's emblematic of real ones there. And this, you know, Donald Trump is actually holding a rally in Johnstown, Pennsylvania today.
This very afternoon at the War Memorial Arena. So that speaks a lot to how things have perhaps evolved from 1980 when the song came out to now, that you might have had a character like the protagonist in The River. He might have been one of those guys with a union job who faithfully voted up and down the Democratic Party ticket, because that's what union guys did in those days. And, you know, since Bruce Springsteen characters are fictional characters, we're allowed to extrapolate about what becomes of them. It's conceivable, Brian, that this guy might have gone from union straight Democratic ticket guy to Reagan Democrat to Republican to Tea Party to Trump. It's, you know, possible.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We're in New York and New Jersey Public Radio as we talk about some of the themes in Bruce Springsteen's new memoir, Born to Run, and listen to a little relevant music with David Camp, Vanity Fair contributing editor, who recently profiled Springsteen for the magazine. That song, by the way, I understand was written for his sister and brother-in-law, whose lives started out like the narrator in the song. What was their story?
Right. So there's a conflation of that Johnstown, Pennsylvania steel mill worker or construction worker. The actual circumstances of Bruce Springsteen's sister Virginia's life, when she was a senior in high school, age 17, she got married to, or she got pregnant by, in her senior year of high school, a fellow named Mickey Shave. And suddenly, as they say in the song, "The River," that was all she wrote. They had a shotgun marriage. Mickey took on jobs in construction. She took a job in South Jersey working for Kmart. And they were a working class struggling couple. And this is before Bruce Springsteen has struck it rich, so he couldn't feather bed their existence with his residual wealth.
And we learn in the book, if we didn't know it already, that his dad was a gruff, detached guy who struggled with mental illness. Is it the specter of his father who hangs over a lot of his songs and his characters?
Absolutely, because the father embodied this restlessness that we've talked about. His father was a man who was a brooder, who drank six packs of beer in the dark in his kitchen, and his relationship with Bruce was very volatile. And ultimately, it kind of did explode into this flight west to California. When Ginny, the younger sister, was pregnant, and when Bruce was only 19, Dad just said, "Forget this. We're moving to California and leaving you kids behind."
And those are some of the roots that give Springsteen his working class bona fides to fuel his songwriting.
Right. And I mean, forget about that experience. Just the first 10 years of his life, even though they took place in the 1950s, were almost more Dust Bowl John Steinbeck than Ozzy and Harriet. You know, he was real privation, real that living in a ramshackle house with three generations, with his grandparents there. He had a tough, true to his persona, working class, bordering on poor upbringing.
One kind of funny side note, I learned from the book that Springsteen has never really held any kind of job other than playing music. Is that kind of ironic, considering he writes so much and so well about the working person?
You might say it, but if you think of how he approached rock music, he actually says in the book something along the lines of, "I put on a factory worker's clothes. I put on my father's clothes to go to work." The only way he saw out of this, you know, post-industrial despair of Freehold, New Jersey, was music. And he went about it in a very workmanlike way.
We're going to move from the late 70s, early 80s to a more contemporary song. Here's a bit of the song, "Death to My Hometown," from Springsteen's 2012 album, Wrecking Ball.
"Send a robber bound straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around ate the flesh of everything they found. His crimes have gone unpunished now. Who walk the streets as free men now. Now they won't.
You could imagine a crowd singing there with their fists in the air like an anthem, except it's such a dreary message. Death to our hometown, boys. It should have been a football rah-rah with that kind of musical setting, I thought. But then when you listen to the rest of the lyrics in that verse, the greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Is this sort of Springsteen's Occupy song?
Yeah, this is his Occupy Wall Street anthem. Bear in mind, it came out in 2012. I think it was written a couple of years earlier when we're still very much in the post-2008 recession. And we know Bruce Springsteen's politics to tack left. So we know that this would almost be a more of a Bernie song than a Trump song. But that said, if you look at the lyrics, they're about holding bankers and hedge fund guys accountable for looting the factories and destroying the way of life of the working and middle class people in this putatively New Jersey town, the hometown. And so he's not chanting death to my hometown. He's saying these guys caused the death, and now it's time for vengeance. And Brian, what's interesting about this song in 2012 is that you no longer have that hope that even his despairing 70s and early 80s protagonists have.
Wow. If your profile of, in your profile of Springsteen for this month's Vanity Fair, you talked about the actual song Born to Run, which is arguably his most famous song, and he named the book after it. It's the climax of every single concert he plays, or so I'm told, that the two that I've seen it was, and he told you that he never really gets sick of it. Now, he was on Fresh Air earlier this month, and in this 15-second clip, he explains to Terry Gross how some of his older songs hold up.
So it was going back to my earliest music and re-singing my earliest songs that I wrote when I was 22. And it was funny that they just fit perfectly well. You know, there was they sort of gather the years up as time passes.
I love that phrase he uses, the songs gather the years up. What do you think he means by that exactly?
Well, he means that the themes resonate no matter what the era. And he said a good song. And one interesting thing about Bruce Springsteen is he's unprepossessing, but he's not immodest. Very conscious of, I have made an important contribution to American culture. And that was by design, too. That's, again, to go back to your question about, did he ever do an honest day's work? His workmanlike approach was to build up a great canon of songs. And Born to Run was consciously conceived when he was still a young fellow to be an important, durable song.
Here's one more clip of Springsteen from that Fresh Air interview talking about why he still lives pretty close to where he grew up in central New Jersey.
I just felt very comfortable here, and I was uncomfortable with city life. I was more or less a kid that came out of a small town, and I was a beach bum and loved the ocean and loved the sun, and I liked the people that were here. I liked who I was when I was here. I wanted to continue writing about the things that I felt were important, and those things were pretty much here. I felt like a lot of my heroes from the past lost themselves in different ways once they had a certain amount of success. And I was nervous about that, and I wanted to remain grounded. And living in this part of New Jersey was something that was, it was essential to who I was and continues to this day to be that way.
Continues to this day to be that way. Do you think that's part of what keeps him so relevant musically and culturally?
Absolutely. He never became part of an L.A. or New York or a coastal elite scene, even though he, you know, owns a house in L.A. He never became part of a scene. He stayed in New Jersey. Brian, I actually wanted to share with you a quote that didn't make my Vanity Fair piece where we discussed this and how he said he never was fully part of the counterculture. He said, my band is pre and post hippie in a funny sort of way. There's a counterculture element that just came from growing up at that time. But I think there was also a suspiciousness of it because we came out of a small town where a lot of people went a different way. Like I was saying in the book, my brother-in-law, and this brings us, Brian, back to the river, my brother-in-law is a man of the 50s, and he'd lived his life like that. I have a foot in there myself. That's Bruce talking. So he's saying, like, I never turned on and tuned in, all that stuff. I retain a suspicion of the coastal elites myself.
This memoir is more than 500 pages long. Does it hold up as a book?
It's wonderful. And, you know, I was not mandated to come to that conclusion because I was profiling him. It's very easy to read. It's very episodic, short chapters. I asked him if he'd read Bob Dylan's Chronicles, which is much more elliptical and episodic. And he said, yeah, and I really love that book, but there was no way I could do a book like that. I just, same thing, put on my factory man's clothes, put my head down, and write it chronologically.
And Springsteen came out, last thing, just this week with a stinging rebuke of Donald Trump, even though in a way they seem to speak to the same core constituency. How do you see the overlap between Springsteen and Trump touching some of the same hearts and minds as personal to the listener, despite coming to very different worldviews?
Well, they both have a talent for rousing huge, mostly white crowds. But the crucial difference is, and Bruce Springsteen's been giving interviews in Britain this past week where he's promoting the book. He has sympathy for the people in those crowds. He's more never Trump than with her, perhaps. And he's saying these people are being conned. And he's working against that. He's saying these people have a reason to feel disenfranchised by globalization and the obsolescence of factory jobs, but that fellow is a con man. He's not the one who's going to lead them to the promised land.
And we leave it there with Vanity Fair contributing editor David Camp. Thanks so much for coming on the show and talking about Bruce Springsteen's memoir, Born to Run.
Thank you, and thanks for Bruce the Debate. Loved it.
Man, the poets down here don't write nothing at all. They just stand back and let it all be. And in the thick of the night, they reach for their moment and try to make an honest stand. But they wind up wounded, not even dead.